The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at cooperadio.org. Among the highlights of this year's Heart of the City Festival was the shadow play, Incarcerated, Truth in the Shadows, three personal stories about Canada's prison system. The stories came from a writing and storytelling workshop organized and facilitated by Megaphone Magazine's Speakers Bureau. Among the facilitators of the eight-week workshop was Kelsey Timler, a PhD candidate at the UBC School of Nursing's Critical Research in Health and Healthcare Inequities. Earlier this month, I spoke with Kelsey Timler. Hello, Kelsey Timler, and welcome to Co-op Radio.
Hi, James. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's certainly our pleasure. This the Incarcerated Project sounds like a fascinating piece at the Heart of the City Festival. And I did earlier this week have a nice conversation with David Mendez, who's sort of one of the creative forces behind the shadow puppetry display of how these stories are presented. But I understand that you played a very big role in helping to bring those stories to life in the first place. So how are you involved in this project?
Yeah, thanks, James. I'm going to take us back a couple years. I ended up meeting Nicholas Cryer, who's one of the leaders within the Megaphone Speakers Bureau, part of Megaphone Magazine, a few years ago at a Michael Smith Health event, and he was talking about his work with Illicit, doing live theater at that point in the pre-pandemic world, about the drug policy crisis and stigma related to that. And we got to talking about the power of storytelling and my work with folks in prison and how powerful it would be to have an opportunity for people to share their stories of stigma and also of strength. And one thing led to another, and we ended up applying for a Vancouver Foundation grant. We were thankfully successful and started a partnership with the Megaphone Speakers Bureau. For a few years, Speakers Bureau has been offering writing workshops for folks in the Downtown East Side specific to drug use and related stigma, and has this really beautiful format of peer-led writing workshops that are trauma-informed. There's a lot of time spent making sure that people feel safe, that they know that they have control over what part of their many stories they want to share, and that consent and compassion and strength are kind of the key things, not so much tell me the worst thing that's ever happened to you, which can happen in media quite often. And so we started those workshops. I guess that was last fall. We started in the pandemic, so this has been quite a wild ride of figuring out how to bring people together in a good way during COVID-19. We met weekly in the Downtown East Side at 312 Main and shared food, and I got to kind of sit in and watch as the peer leaders within Speakers Bureau walked alongside these storytellers for people who have survived incarceration, to figure out what they wanted to share with the world and how they wanted to share it. And at the end of that, we ended up with three completed stories. And because the pandemic reduced the number of folks that we could actually fit into a room safely, we had a little bit of an extra budget and wanted to explore how visual storytelling could add another layer to the Megaphone Speakers Bureau process. And that's where David and the Illicit team have come in.
You mentioned that the writing workshops were for people in the Downtown East Side, and but you particularly emphasize about telling stories around drug use, but Incarcerated, Truth in the Shadows is specifically about the carceral system in Canada. So I'm wondering, was the writing workshop that you created specifically for people who had been incarcerated, or did it just so happen that, you know, these three stories emerged from one of your workshops and they all had that running theme of the carceral state?
No, that was very intentional, and thank you for pushing me to clarify. The previous Megaphone Speakers Bureau workshops were focused on drug use and stigma, and this partnership between Speakers Bureau and then myself, and I'm part of a wider team called the UBC Transformative Health and Justice Research Cluster, was specific for folks who have been incarcerated, either at the federal or provincial level, knowing that drug use and colonialism and white supremacy and stigma are all interwoven. So it's, you know, a large umbrella, and I think both those topics fit under it, but this was specific to the carceral state.
What can you tell me about the stories that emerged from this writing workshop, and maybe a little bit about what in particular that attracted you and your team to them? Why these particular stories were the ones that ended up being chosen?
That's a great question. I think to start, all of the three stories that were completed have become part of the Incarcerated Shadow Theater piece. So there was no kind of criteria or selection about which ones are better than others. This was an opportunity for folks to share whatever they wanted in their voice and to have the Illicit team create a visual depiction to amplify what they're trying to say. The storytellers are just amazing. They are compassionate and they are brave, and it takes a lot, I think, to come into a room where you don't know anybody and sit with a bunch of strangers who are asking you to write something about your life and about a topic that is quite sensitive and that many people talk about in a really stigmatizing and dehumanizing way. And to show up every week with strength and kindness and the urge to kind of break the silence. So parallel to this, we also did research with the storytellers, myself and other peer leaders from the Transformative Health and Justice Cluster and Speakers Bureau. And we really heard that the stories were an opportunity to break silence and to kind of get something out that had been inside of people. There's so much stigma around incarceration, and this is an opportunity for folks to say something that they've wanted to say for a really long time. So I think the writing workshops provided a sense of safety for people to be able to say what they wanted to say. But the stories were already inside of them. So I think the storytellers really, I can't applaud them enough. And I'm just so excited for the world to see what they have to say.
How do you create an atmosphere where people who've endured so much trauma, how do you create an atmosphere for them to be able to start to tell their stories?
Yeah, that's another great question. I played the role of kind of the support person, organizing catering, getting honoraria together. Folks were paid for their time. That's really important to me and the rest of the team. And I think I had an expectation that the writing workshops would start with writing, and they really didn't. It took a few weeks for pen to hit paper in any way. And thinking back about it, that was really intentional. And I think the Speakers Bureau has a very finely tuned and beautiful understanding of how to create and sustain and work towards safety, recognizing that it's not, you can't just create a safe space and then say it's created and it stays that way. So there was a lot of talk about strength in storytelling. Elder Roberta Price and Dr. Vicki Reynolds came and did a guest kind of speaker thing about trauma-informed writing. And Dr. Reynolds has a phrase that the wisdom is not in the womb, the wisdom is not in the wound. The idea that people are expected to share the most horrible thing that's ever happened to them, and that if, you know, the rest of society realizes about all the trauma and the violence, then things will change. But we know from so many examples that sharing trauma over and over again doesn't actually stop the traumatizing from happening, and it doesn't change systems, and it's in the strength and compassion. So Elder Roberta and Dr. Reynolds spoke a lot about being in control and how the story could be whatever they wanted. And maybe it could be about how are you still alive? Like the strength and the amazingness of being able to show up and want to tell your story, to want to help out by kind of opening up a part of yourself and sharing it with the world. I think other things like just moving at the speed of trust, that's a phrase from the restorative justice world, making sure that folks didn't have to speak if they didn't want to. We would go around in circle and people could pass. People didn't have to share their writing if they weren't ready. So it was just a very slow and relational process. There was food at every event. I have these hilarious pictures of us all spread out, socially distanced with our, you know, little catering things. Trying to create a sense of relationship and of trust and being available for the storytellers if they had any questions or concerns. Also the idea that they didn't have to share their story in any way if they wanted to. They could come every week, they could write, and then they could leave and never see us again if that was what they wanted. So even the fact that we're doing this very public film launch I think is proof of the way that relationship over time. I think if folks have showed up and we had said on day one, you know, this is your name is going to be out there and people are going to be tuning in from all across BC and wherever, that would have been a very different and not well done thing.
So clearly not like some sort of classroom where you're expected to hand in your homework and get a grade or anything like that.
No, not at all. And Megaphone Speakers Bureau and Megaphone Magazine also has an editor, Paula Carson, I believe her name is. And so she offered to edit and I think did editing in a very trauma-informed way. So not a red pen crossing out, this goes there, this is the wrong word, but really engaging with the content and the heart of what people were saying, and then finding the way to gently offer ways to strengthen it.
To this layman, it sounds like what you've been describing over the past few minutes sounds like a group therapy session with a counselor or a psychiatrist or something like that. Are workshops like this, do you see them sort of as complementing therapy for people trying to get over and cope with the trauma that they've experienced, or something like a replacement for therapy?
I think that writing and community building around creativity can be therapeutic. I don't think I'd go as far to say that it was therapy. I'm not a trained mental health professional. We did have Elder Roberta Price available to speak to folks if they did feel like they wanted to have some support along the way. And I think that professional and cultural supports around mental health are really important and can't be replaced by things like this. But in this project and another work that I do with folks in prison around storytelling, I think that there is a therapeutic aspect. The idea that people can get things out on a page, that they feel listened to, that they are seen as an artist or a storyteller instead of any one of the dehumanizing labels that we give to people in prison. We had a dinner about a month ago where we showed the final piece to the storytellers, and I almost jumped out of my chair and danced when one of the storytellers going around the circle introduced herself for the first time as a writer. So just that taking back of language and identity and finding other ways to be seen in the world, because people have already been being in the world in diverse and beautiful ways outside of the prison identity.
Without going into names or too much detail, you said that the prison system is informed a great deal by trauma that people don't know about. But there's also that fact that people don't know about it. It seems to me that the prison system is something that's deliberately kept away from the general public and what goes on in prisons. So I wonder, again, if you're comfortable telling me, can you give us an idea of what are the types of stories that these people were telling about? What is it like to be a First Nations and Indigenous person inside Canada's prison system?
Yeah, that's a huge question. That's an important question. I think our prison system is built with bricks of colonialism and white supremacy and harm. And the process is unfair and unjust and isolating. The stories themselves, I think, will shed light on different aspects of that. Not all the storytellers are Indigenous, but the system is definitely hidden from view on purpose. And I think a big part of this work is to shed light. Something that happened at the beginning of the pandemic that I was given a bit of hope from is the increased social attention to prisons. Because so often people don't think about incarcerated people at all. Or if they do, it's when, you know, somebody escapes from prison or there's a thing in the news about somebody getting parole and everybody kind of clutches their pearls. So to have COVID cases in prison and there's so much news media, I think it's a great opportunity for people to actually sit back and think, like, are we okay with caging people? Something that a colleague of mine, Patrick Keating, who is an artist and a playwright, said a few months ago to me that I can't get out of my brain. At the beginning of the pandemic, when we were talking about the human cost of self-isolating in homes and people we're so worried about the mental health of folks like myself who are in their apartments with their patios and their Netflix and their DoorDash, but we don't give a second thought to that type of isolation for people for decades of their lives. And I think for many Indigenous people, the prison system is, well, for all Indigenous people, it's an extension of the residential school system. And as our national attention is focused on the discovery and confirmation, Indigenous people have known there's been mass graves. The confirmation of mass graves, I hope that the lens can continue to pull out and we can think about how that system is directly linked to the current child welfare system and the carceral system. The rates of Indigenous people in prison are completely unacceptable. And I think that storytelling is a small but a powerful way to shed light on that and to dream about what could be better and what could be different.
I think I can appreciate the benefits of the person telling the story at the you know, again, therapy might not be the right word, but again, that's the one that comes to mind. The therapeutic benefits of telling the story. But I wonder if we can, you know, turn that around. What benefits are there for people like me who, you know, I've never had any dealings with the police or the prison system or anything like that? Even though I spend time in the downtown East Side, I don't know a great deal about Indigenous life and culture. What sort of benefits are there for the rest of us who are listening to the stories?
Yeah.
If that question makes any sense at all.
It does. It completely does. The first time I entered a prison was in 2014 or 15. I went to Mountain Institution, which is a federal men's institution out in the valley. And I sat with a couple men and I heard from them about their lives and their participation in a work program there. I was there for research and it completely changed my life. I think when you hear the word story, particularly as white settler people, it can often bring to mind a storybook or a tall tale that an uncle tells. But stories are the world that we live in. There's prison system as it currently exists is held up by stories about who deserves to be locked up and who doesn't, about what is right and wrong, about who gets human rights and who gets violated. And the way that we see people who are leaving prison is also held up by stories about who is dangerous and who doesn't deserve to be in society anymore, even though they've, you know, paid the price that our system has asked of them. So I think having these counter stories to push back against that huge narrative is really powerful. Even if it's just a little bit of a crack in the kind of status quo understanding of how the world works and that prisons are the way they are and should be the way they are, or that policing is working great. You know, these narratives that have been held up for so long and they seem inherent, but they're not. They're just built with stories told over and over and over again. So I hope that when people tune in on Saturday, there's an opportunity for these three voices to offer something different and to get people thinking about why our system is the way it is and what history is being carried along with that, and then what that means for the way that we treat each other and our future.
Have you had a chance to watch the production Incarcerated: Truth in the Shadows? I understand it was actually pre-recorded a few months ago.
Yes, I did have a chance to watch it, and I had the joy of also being in the room while it was being filmed. So I'm excited to tune in on Saturday to see the kind of polished final bit and to watch the panel with the storytellers. But I do know the stories and the visuals quite well at this point. I'm clutching my heart at this as I'm saying this. It just brings me a lot of joy to think about the beautiful visuals that the Alyssa team has brought to these three people's voices.
Can you elaborate a bit about that? What are your impressions of the work that David Mendez and Alyssa Productions did about how they actually have presented the stories that we'll be seeing on tonight's event?
Yeah, it's kind of like a magic show, if that makes sense. was not really aware of the depth and breadth of shadow theater until I met Nicholas at that event years ago and heard about the work that he was doing with Illicit. But to see these handmade, I think that's another thing that's really important to say, is that there's artists within the Illicit team that are hand drawing and cutting out these little puppets, these little outlines, and then moving them behind a screen. And then the storytellers are there in person as a silhouette, and there's these backgrounds, and there's this kind of sound landscape. I'm sure that there's technical terms for all of this, but it's just a really beautiful experience. And I think David and his team did a very wonderful job of taking the words, the already written words of these three people, and then amplifying them and creating a bit of a world to escape into visually.
You mentioned the question and answer discussion portion that'll be on afterwards and conducted live among the people who have tuned in to watch the show. Are you going to be participating in that as one of the panelists, or are you just going to be there as an observer?
I will be there as an observer and a support person. The panelists will be the three storytellers, and then perhaps David. I think that this is their show. This is their story, their voice. And so I'm just really excited to support from afar and send them texts about how amazing they're doing. Having not heard the questions or heard what their answers are, I know that they'll just do amazingly.
Well, I'm asking because I'm wondering maybe if you have any thoughts on, because the question and answer session obviously is meant to begin a dialogue among the storytellers and the ones listening. And I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on what sort of a dialogue that you would hope to see emerge from this presentation.
Yeah, that's a great question. I hope that folks are able to just share their gratitude with the storytellers for the bravery and strength of the stories, and are able to show up as witnesses to the piece. And also that there's a dialogue about kind of the what next, because they stand alone. They're pieces of art, and they're also a call to action. And I hope that folks can pick up on that and start a dialogue about what does this mean for me, whoever the me is. If you're a lawyer, if you're a community advocate, if you are a mom, a father, a sister, a brother, whoever you are, all the multiple identities that we carry. Because the stories, they are about what has happened, and there's also a dreaming of a better world. So what role can we all play in that? Does that answer your question?
I think so, yes. Yes, indeed. Are more workshops like the one that Megaphone put on that initiated this project, or is more of that going to be coming?
So we are in the process of finding a way to bring them into prisons. That was when I first met Nicholas Cryer from Speakers Bureau. That was kind of the big dream, and pandemic and just the way that prisons are, bringing things in is complicated, and there's a lot of bureaucracy and barriers and attention to safety, which is something that we're working with our partners. In other work, I've been working in partnership with Correctional Service of Canada for some years, and am really grateful to have a team of amazing folks there who help to kind of actualize these dreams that myself and the other folks that I work with have. So we're hoping to be able to bring some version of the workshops into probably one federal institution as a bit of a pilot project, and then see where that goes from there. The format that we did in the Downtown East Side of meeting weekly in person and sharing food is most likely not going to work. There's still at different sites, different restrictions around in-person visitation because of COVID-19 at the moment. But we're hopeful that there can be some way to provide feedback and create a bit of a community of writers and storytellers in prison. conversations so far with folks have highlighted that while the written word is very powerful, it would be great to be a little bit more inclusive and creative about what that could look like. So if people want to show up and write songs or create music, oral storytelling, other methods of storytelling, including visual art, I think. So it's all in progress, but hopefully I can be back here in a year or two repping some other amazing art event for folks that are currently incarcerated or hopefully released by then.
Well, I know you'll have a receptive ear at Co-op Radio, so yes, do please keep us in touch. We'd be love to have you back on the show. I wonder if you have any maybe final thoughts that you'd like to let our listeners know about either the project or about Canada's prisons or about storytelling or about anything you wish.
I really invite everyone listening to tune in today at 8 p.m. You can go to Heart of the City Festival and find the information there. And then beyond that, to really just start paying attention to prison. There's a lot of beautiful art and writing and music. There's podcasts. It's a quick Google search away to find things that are written and created by people who have been or are incarcerated. There's the physical walls that separate us, but then there's also this imaginary kind of mental block that society has put up, and it doesn't have to be there. They are our neighbors. And they should be treated as such. They are humans. They are people. And I am just continually inspired and honored and brought to laughter by the amazingness of all the folks that I work with. So I hope that everyone can just join me in that work.
It's been a great pleasure having a chance to speak with you, Kelsey. Thank you very much for joining me here on Co-op Radio.
Thank you so much, James. Have a wonderful day.
That was Kelsey Timler. The shadow play, Incarcerated, Truth in the Shadows, has been archived on the Heart of the City Festival website and can be viewed anytime by going to heartofthecityfestival.com. CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.